Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us. Let's go back to the courtroom now for the September 14th hearing of Alec Murtaugh.
Ms. Barbier.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court.
Yes, ma'am.
Your Honor is aware that on August 21st, I filed with the court an initial sentencing memorandum, and in that sentencing memorandum, laid out for Your Honor some of the background of the investigation, joint and federal investigation, and then also talked a lot about Mr. Fleming's life, his community involvement, the things that bring him to you today as a whole person to look at. And then, Your Honor, following the guilty plea, which is when we heard a lot of the same information that we heard today from Mr. Waters, on September 12th, we filed a supplemental sentencing memorandum. And in that sentencing memorandum, we addressed a few of the factual issues that we had some discrepancies with. And then yesterday, I received a response from the state. And I want to thank the state because they responded very quickly. And I think that what I gleaned from their memorandum is there's very little that we disagree with in terms of the responses they made to our sentencing memorandum. First, Your Honor, I took issue with the fact that they said that Mr. Fleming had invited Mr. Satterfield into his office and changed the personal representative execution forms. I pointed out the evidence simply doesn't support that, and Mr. Waters agrees with that. And we're not saying it's material to his guilt, but we wanted to point that out because it was factually inaccurate. Secondly, Your Honor, with respect to the caption that was created on the stipulation of dismissal, the petition, and the order, that was not done by Mr. Fleming. Again, that's not material to his guilt, but it's something that, you know, I wanted to point out for the court was not accurate. Regarding the check that was written on the Pinckney settlement proceeds, the $89,000 check, Mr. Waters stated during his plea factual basis that had been made out to Alec personally. It was not. It was made out to the Murtaugh firm at that time. Again, that's not necessarily material to his guilt, but that was a factual inaccuracy that we wanted to point out. Most importantly, Your Honor, and I appreciate the state's candidness with the court on this issue, they, right out of the gate in their sentencing memorandum, said, and I'm quoting them because I don't want to misspeak on their behalf, they said the state does not allege that Fleming necessarily knew the specific particulars of Murtaugh's fake forge account or that Murtaugh intended to steal all of the money given to him. Indeed, the state has consistently accepted that Fleming might not have expected Murtaugh to steal all of the money. And that's an important fact to Mr. Fleming, Your Honor. That's an important fact that he wants you to know. And that, again, was reiterated today by Mr. Waters in his closing argument or his fact, whatever it, you want to call it, that he made today. And so we appreciate those two concessions. Those are very important for Mr. Fleming to have on the public record, both for him and, you know, for his friends and supporters to understand. And so I appreciate the state's response and the prompt response of that nature. With respect to the forge issue, Your Honor, I know that Mr. Bland and Mr. Waters have made a lot of comments about what Mr. Fleming definitely knew or should have known or did know and what he did. We pointed out in our sentencing memorandum a couple of things that I think would be good to reiterate at this time. Your Honor's heard, I'm sure, a lot about forge from the other trial that you had and from the information in that trial that was put forth about forge consulting. Your Honor's probably aware that the fake forge account was created in September of 2015, which is years before the Satterfield case came to be. The account was started at Bank of America, and it was titled Alexander Murdaugh DBA Forge. The account clearly had no affiliation with the real Forge Consulting. But Mr. Murdaugh was the only authorized signer on that account. He's the only one that had access to it. He's the only one on the signature card. And unbeknownst to Mr. Fleming and to a lot of other people that Your Honor himself heard from during that murder trial, good people, people that had known Mr. Murdaugh for 40 years. And the crux of the testimony, Your Honor, I don't have to tell you because you had front seat to that trial. But the crux of that testimony was that Mr. Murdaugh habitually lied to everyone in his personal and professional life. He lied extensively to his law partners, to his accounting department, his CFO, his family, his office manager, his banks, his creditors, his opposing counsel, to judges, and court personnel. And Your Honor, during this time period, I think it should be known, Mr. Murdaugh was the president of the Trial Lawyers Association. He was many accounts, a respected member of the bar, and a lot of people, including Mr. Fleming, were stunned to find out that he had been stealing millions of dollars, diverting it into this fake forge account. Ms. Seckinger, I recall, her testimony was that the firm had these checks being written to forge for years out of their trust account, and they didn't know he was stealing. There were the bank statements from the fake forge account were in Mr. Murdaugh's office. No one caught that. No one caught the fact that these checks were coming back with his individual signature on it. Mr. Fleming never saw those types of checks come through his office. I cited to the testimony of Mr. Cope, a partner at the Murdaugh firm, who recounted the story of when he told Mr. Fleming about this fake forge account and about what had transpired at the firm and about the fact that they had caught Mr. Murdaugh stealing money from the firm. And I cited to you, his testimony, and the crux of his testimony was that Mr. Fleming immediately brought up the Satterfield case. He was calling him about a completely different matter. Mr. Fleming's the one who brought up the Satterfield case and said, oh my God, we had the forge account in the Satterfield case and it was for millions. And Mr. Cope's clear impression was that Mr. Fleming was shell-shocked. And I say this, Your Honor, and I give you this information not to minimize or downplay or excuse any conduct of Mr. Fleming, okay? Because what we are here today for is a sentencing. As Your Honor knows, Mr. Fleming has pled guilty to each and every count that he's been charged with. That doesn't happen very often. He pled guilty to all of the conduct in federal court, and he's pled guilty in this court to the conduct. And so he's not here to make excuses for himself or to call himself a victim or to place the blame on anybody's shoulders other than his own. But I have to take issue with the theme of Mr. Waters' closing argument during this process here. He says that Mr. Fleming's guilty plea is the equivalent of pleading guilty to speeding at the rate of 58 miles an hour in a 55-mile zone when he's really going 90. And I have to say, with all due respect, this analogy is a gross mischaracterization of Mr. Fleming's guilty plea and the illegal conduct that he has fully acknowledged. He's pled guilty to each in every count in state and federal court, and that's a total of 24 felony counts. And that's hardly a speeding ticket. And he has not run away from his guilt in this case, not in any way whatsoever. He has, as Mr. Waters would have you believe, he's not run away. He has confronted his actions. He has stepped up to the plate. He has fully acknowledged that he was wrong, that he committed illegal acts, and that he is guilty. And he can only give this court and he can only give the government the facts as he knows them. That's it. He can't make things up about himself or other people. He can't say things that aren't true. He has acknowledged his guilt, though. And as your honor's aware, that is not the case in most cases. In most cases, first of all, people aren't always prosecuted in both state and federal court, even when there's concurrent jurisdiction. You know, many times one prosecuting entity defers to the other. That's generally the normal course of business. Your honor was a prosecutor. I was a prosecutor. That happens all the time. And that's not the case here, and I'm not here to complain about that. And we're not here to complain, and we're not here to subscribe any kind of motive to those decisions. But what I do know is this. I know that the South Carolina Attorney General's office and the United States Attorney's office share the exact same goals. And those, the primary goals of those offices are, number one, to protect the public, and number two, to promote respect for the rule of law, and number three, to defer and deter future misconduct, and also, in the end, to ensure that a punishment that is sufficient but not greater than necessary is imposed. And I submit to Your Honor that all of these goals are accomplished in a concurrent sentence. No individual should be forced to serve two separate sentences for the exact same illegal conduct. And I want to address a matter that Mr. Bamberg and Mr. Waters have both raised regarding the Pinckney matter. The Pinckney matter was fully included in the state sentence, and Judge Gergel made that extremely clear. It was included in the loss calculations. They were notified under the Mandatory Victims Act. The loss amounts were included in the loss calculations. The restitution was ordered on the Pinckney case. Ms. Pinckney and Mr. Bamberg were available to speak at the sentencing. They attended all the hearings that I'm aware of, and they've been given treatment just as any other victim in federal court. So that matter has been heard, and it wasn't litigated because Mr. Fleming acknowledged his guilt in those matters. And so this idea that justice hasn't been served in that case, I take issue with that because it has. I mean, you don't order restitution in a case unless there's findings made and unless they are considered victims in the case and unless that conduct was folded into the sentence created by Judge Gergel. And so, Your Honor, what I would submit is that the desire to pursue dual prosecutions is within the discretion of these prosecuting bodies, but it also, that desire still has to be tempered by the rule of law. And justice, I would submit, is not served for South Carolinians or defendants by obtaining multiple convictions in a high-profile case and requiring a man to serve two separate sentences for the same offenses. And that, Your Honor, is consistent with the rule of law. I would submit, Your Honor, that, and there's been a lot of talk about this involves a state license and a state court system and state judges, and I don't disagree with any of that. Of course it does. I mean, that's why we're here, because Mr. Fleming has admitted guilt in that. But when you look to, you know, who the United States Attorney's Office and the Attorney General's Office, who they serve the public. And it's not two separate publics. It is the public. And I don't even say it's to the citizens of South Carolina, because they serve the non-citizens, too. They serve everybody. And so I don't understand the division that's being tried to create here with respect to, you know, justice can only be done here in this courtroom. Of course, this courtroom plays an integral role in serving justice. But Your Honor, I believe, understands that the role that these prosecutors have and the role that the other prosecutors have are the same. And they generally work as a team, and they generally work to the same ends, and that is that to see justice served. If you look to the American Bar Association's standards on who the client of the prosecutor is, there's a section, and it's in a publication they put out called the Criminal Justice Standards for the Prosecution Function. And it says the client of the prosecutor is the public. And it's not any particular government agency, law enforcement officer, or unit, or witness, or victim. When investigating or prosecuting a criminal matter, the prosecutor does not represent law enforcement personnel who've worked on the matter, and such law enforcement personnel, they're not the prosecutor's clients. The client is the public for both prosecuting entities. So, Your Honor, I would submit that in these proceedings, you know, those purposes are being served. And I don't take any issue with the representation that the Attorney General's office has made, that they have been a central role in this case and that SLED's been a central role. I wouldn't dare to endeavor to do that, Your Honor. Everybody has an important role in this process, and certainly the Attorney General's office and SLED has too. And from my understanding, from all the press releases that have come out from both bodies, they have embraced the idea that this was a joint investigation and there were joint efforts by everybody involved, all the agencies involved, to bring this case to justice. And Your Honor, I would like to take some time to talk about Mr. Fleming and his life before this, his family, his community, many of whom are here today. You've got a packed courtroom. And I would submit, Your Honor, that doesn't happen every day, as Your Honor might be aware. I think that Mr. Fleming is overwhelmed, and he knows how lucky he is and how grateful he is to have the support of so many people. And contrary to what the comment Mr. Waters made, they're not here because they have to be. They're here because they want to be. They're here because, you know, they understand that Mr. Fleming made some terrible decisions. They understand that this has forever changed the course of his life. But they are forgiving and they are supportive. And I think it's a beautiful thing to see, I believe. But Your Honor, I want to take just a brief opportunity to introduce you to Mrs. Fleming. She's here. They've been married for 25 years. She's seated in the courtroom in the front room. His parents are also here. They're Caroline and Frank Koslick and Astor and Catherine Fleming.
You want them to stand so I'll know who you're talking about?
Sure. If you all would stand, I would appreciate it.
And who's
standing? So on the far right, we have Eve Fleming. Ms. Fleming's also a member of the bar. She's a public defender here in this area and has worked with juveniles her career. And then we have Mr. Fleming and his wife, Catherine. And then we've got Caroline and Frank Koslick, Mr. Fleming's mom and stepfather. And so, you know, not only have these friends and supporters and this family been here today, they were here. A lot of them came to his guilty plea in Williamsburg County, and a lot of them came to his federal proceedings as well. So I can tell you Mr. Fleming is overwhelmed with gratitude for that and doesn't necessarily believe that he's deserving of it, but is extremely grateful. Mr. Fleming also has two children. They are not here today. One's in college, and Mr. Fleming felt that it would be better for him to continue his studies and focus on school. Then he came to the federal plea, and so he's not leaving school to come to this. His daughter just started a job with the Department of Defense.
Do you want to
continue studying? Oh, no, I'm sorry. I apologize. His daughter's not here today. She's overseas. She's just started a new job, just graduated from college. Mr. Fleming's very proud of her. They all are. she was at his federal plea. And so, you know, I can tell you that the friends and supporters that he have, and we've talked about this in our sentencing memorandum, but I think that it sheds a lot of light on his unique personal history and characteristics, because this is his community and they're here for him. He's had some extraordinary good works. And so I want to take a few moments to talk about that, just to give you some additional insight. And I want to make sure, Your Honor, that I preface these comments by saying nothing that I'm going to say or that his supporters are going to say about him and about why we're here today is meant to diminish his acknowledgement of his guilt or his acknowledgement of the wrongfulness of what he did. Mr. Fleming acknowledges the seriousness of his actions. He feels nothing but remorse, and he has expressed that remorse on multiple occasions, but he specifically did it at the sentencing hearing in federal court, and he's going to do it again today, Your Honor. I'm sorry that there are some that don't believe it's sincere remorse. I think, you know, Your Honor can be the judge of that. I know that when Judge Gergel listened to his remarks and to the remarks of the people that spoke, he did believe that he was remorseful. And, you know, it's going to be really hard for me to talk about Corey Fleming's life and do a better job of describing him than the people who have written you letters. And I know Your Honor has received a lot of letters. People are still writing me letters. As of yesterday, I was getting new letters. They keep coming in, Your Honor, and I think that's a testament to how strongly people feel about Mr. Fleming. And a lot of these people have a different story about how Mr. Fleming has made an impact on their lives, how he helped them, how he was there for them when they were in need. They're letters that are written by people from all walks of life. Some live in this Beaufort community, and some are from far away. And some are from our older citizens, and some are from very young adults. And some are from his peer group and his former colleagues. And, you know, these people aren't all people that know each other, but they all have stories about Mr. Fleming. And I would submit to you that there are a couple of common themes that run throughout these letters. The first observation that I had when I read these letters was that, you know, it sort of was in keeping with the theory that I've had since I was a judicial law clerk, and that is that you can tell a lot about someone from how they treat the courthouse staff and the non-lawyers in our system. You've received a lot of letters from some of those people, and they talk about the Corey Fleming that they know, and those people include, you know, a bailiff and somebody who worked in the clerk's office, people who have worked at the solicitor's office with him. A retired state trooper and a court security officer who said that there are not enough accolades in the English language to describe his personality and character. You know, there are several letters from people who worked as his paralegal. There's a letter from an agent with the South Carolina Department of Probation and Parole who's known Mr. Fleming for 30 years. And she describes him as, quote, a wonderful human being. She says his character, his work ethic, and behavior over the course of our personal and professional relationship has been above reproach, and his dedication to serving the community and his clients has been inspiring to witness. And, you know, Your Honor, in addition to the courthouse, the letters that I have received from the court personnel, I've also gotten a chance to personally observe people who have interacted with Mr. Fleming when I have gone to court with him. And this is before he was in custody, obviously, and even, you know, after he's been in custody. But there have been just a number of people who've approached me and who've approached him to just say, you know, that they were praying for him and that they were thinking of him and had nothing but good things to say about Mr. Fleming. And so what this tells me about Mr. Fleming is that, you know, for decades, he has treated all of the people who play a unique and important role in our court system with the utmost respect, kindness, and professionalism. And the second theme that I see emerging from these letters is that, you know, I think you can tell a lot about a lawyer from the way he treats young lawyers. And, you know, there are a lot of letters that Your Honor has received from people who knew Mr. Fleming when they were a young lawyer. I remember being a young lawyer. It's scary. You don't know what you're doing. It's intimidating. But many of these people talk about, they talk a great deal about how Mr. Fleming would step in and help. You know, they, when they were first starting, he saw them in court. He understood they didn't know how to do something. He gave them guidance. He gave them advice. You know, he helped them through a hearing. He was never too busy to assist and offer advice. He said, they say when they needed something, they could stop by his office. And, you know, he was never too busy. He would take the time to introduce them to people while he was at the courthouse or at a bar function. You know, he made them feel welcome. They also talk about Mr. Fleming's selfless acts of kindness and helping people who were in the courtroom who didn't have a lawyer because they couldn't afford one, and he helped them anyway. And, you know, Mr. Fleming wasn't writing down these hours to try to get pro bono, you know, lawyer hours or become, you know, known as a pro bono lawyer. He's doing it just simply to help people that needed help. Some of the letters talk about the fact that if the bar had a fundraiser, you know, Mr. Fleming was the first to volunteer his time, you know, to help. The letters describe Mr. Fleming as a lawyer who would stay involved in his clients' lives. He'd help them get jobs. He lent them a car, mentored their children. The list goes on. One letter notes that he's represented the families and the victims of violent crimes free of charge many times during his career, and that he would go above and beyond to help these people through that process for no compensation, only because he knew, and having had a wife who was a public defender, he knew, you know, what that's like, what it means to be in that system. And I do want to quote one letter, Your Honor, from one member of the bar. He said, "I do believe at worst Corey is a good and decent man who succumbed to a very unfortunate lapse of judgment for which he has already paid very dearly." So, Your Honor, I would submit to you that all of the good things that Mr. Fleming did for the legal profession in South Carolina over 29 years, you must also take that into account when fashioning your sentence. And I know that, you know, Your Honor has been sentencing people a long time. I know that it's probably a very difficult part of your job. And I know that you take genuine care in doing this. But when you sentence someone as a whole person. And when you look at Mr. Fleming's life outside of the practice of the law, there's another theme that runs through it, and that is service to his community. Service to others. Some of these letters talk about Mr. Fleming and his life as a neighbor, his life as a landlord, someone they knew from the YMCA, who he was very active in getting built in this county, his church. And you look at what they say about Mr. Fleming. They say that he's the guy that comes over at the crack of dawn on Christmas morning when your pipes are broken. He's the guy that helps you move in on the day your moving truck pulls in and then brings you dinner. They talk about the guy that helped with home improvement projects and never asked for anything in return. He's the guy that made sure you had a ride home from the hospital after you had a stroke. These are all from the letters, Your Honor. He's the guy who cried with you when he discovered that your mom had Alzheimer's and then took the time to take your mom to lunch the next day to make sure he was spending some time with her. You know, there's somebody that some of the letters talk about a man that Mr. Fleming discovered was homeless and how he helped him find a place to live and has helped him get work. You know, the woman who cleaned his house for years talked about how he treated her like family and invited her and her family to share holidays with them. And so, Your Honor, the stories, they go on and on about the help that in the community that Mr. Fleming has served for so many years. One of the things that stands out to me are the single parents that Mr. Fleming has helped. I mean, they talk about the fact that, you know, he did work around their house. He spent time with their children because they didn't have a father. You know, one woman said, who was an 18-year-old single mother when she met the Flemings, said, "Corey, quote, changed the trajectory of my life, and he changed the trajectory of my 22-year-old daughter's life. He invited her to a playgroup, befriended her. He drove her daughter to school for 15 years, lent her a car when she needed it, invited them on fun outings, and made them feel like a part of the community. Another person that you're going to hear from today who was not at the federal sentencing but who has come a long way to be here today is Miss Blue. She was another single mother who rented a house from the Flemings, and she's going to talk about how she was treated by them, by Mr. Fleming in particular. You know, the fact that when she needed help, when she couldn't make ends meet, he was there for her and didn't require her to pay rent. When she talked about when her son got in trouble, you know, he was there for her son. So she's here today, and she's going to address the court. Some of the other letters talk about Mr. Fleming being like a parent to many of his children's friends. You know, there's one couple, their children's friends were in their early 20s, and I thought this letter was so insightful, written by somebody that young. And she said, "I wish that you know that Corey is so much more than this gross era of judgment. Corey is the type of person who treats strangers like friends and friends like family. I have witnessed countless examples of kindness and generosity towards others, organizations, and their families." So what I would submit to Your Honor, unlike the picture that Mr. Waters has painted for you, that Mr. Fleming was using his his goodness for evil, what these letters reveal and what these people are going to tell you is that over his lifetime, Mr. Fleming has demonstrated the fundamental values that sustain a community. Another constant theme about Mr. Fleming is him as a father, him as a husband, and as a son. And in most every single one of the letters, because most everybody that knows Mr. Fleming knows that his family is the most important thing in his life, his family and his faith. They all describe him as a devoted family person, loving, caring, present, and someone who sets an example for other peoples in the community about his treatment of his family and his parenting skills. And, you know, Your Honor, this is, I think, as Your Honor knows, all of these cases and in every case, whether it's white collar or whether it's, you know, any kind of criminal case, it's always hard on the family. And, you know, I think that if there's any solace that Mr. Fleming takes in the decision that he's had to make here, which was to own up to his guilt, it is that he's demonstrating for his children what you do when you make a mistake. You know, you step up, you own it, and you admit you were wrong. And that's what he's done. And that's what he hopes his children gets out of this. Because what he has done is try to do everything human possibly to right the wrong here. You know, you've heard from Mr. Bland that he was the first person to step up and return every bit of the legal fee that his firm took in the Satterfield matter. He's been the first person in this matter to plead guilty, period, and to own up to what he's done. That was issued to his firm. The total fee, $672,000, went to Moskin and Fleming, and then it was split. So yes, that was all returned, Your Honor, in that case. But Mr. Fleming acknowledges his guilt, obviously, in the role he played in getting that fee. But Your Honor, he has stepped up, and this has been a very challenging period in his life. The thing that his friends and his supporters and people know about him, though, is that they believe, and I believe, have faith that he will learn and he will grow from this experience, and he will come out of this better and stronger. And that's the point of punishment. Part of that is rehabilitation. And I would submit to you, Your Honor, that that's already started occurring. When Mr. Fleming's law license was suspended, he didn't curl up in a ball and lie in bed. Okay? He didn't, you know, portray that he was bitter or angry at the world. What he did was started working for Habitat for Humanity. He's very skilled in construction, and he immediately began volunteering his time there because he thought it was the one thing that, you know, he was determined to be productive and determined to be useful in his community and to do something that he could put his skills to work and help other people. And you've got a letter from somebody at Habitat for Humanity who said that Mr. Fleming brought kindness, talent, and humor to the worksite. And what I would say about that, Your Honor, is that this speaks volumes about Mr. Fleming, because if you're able to bring kindness and talent and humor to others during the worst period of your life, that's something else. I would just submit to you, Your Honor, that these letters, you know, as a whole, collectively, they're remarkable. I told Judge Gergel this, and I'll tell you, Mr. Fleming's never read these letters. And I didn't know these stories about Mr. Fleming until I read the letters, because he'd never told me about some of these relationships or some of the people that he'd helped through these things. But he's never read the letters because, you know, it's very difficult for him to think about the fact of how many people he's disappointed in this case. What we do know, Your Honor, what I know, and what his family and friends know, is that at the heart of this, he's a good person who made some very bad decisions. And we know that. We know from our experience that good people do make bad decisions. But I would submit to you, Your Honor, that we are all better than the worst thing that we've ever done. And I want to say for a minute, Mr. Bland mentioned the Georgia bar and the very beginning of this process. And what Your Honor is probably aware of, having been a prosecutor, having been in the system for a long time, Mr. Fleming's not unlike 99.9% of the people that I've seen over 30 years in these situations. And he didn't fully come to terms with what he had done immediately. He admitted to some ethical violations, but he did not admit to his criminal conduct initially. He made a decision, and it was a decision made this year, to hold himself fully accountable for his actions. And simply because, not because the as Mr. Bamberg put, the feds came and knocking. Mr. Fleming's been aware since the very beginning of this that this was a joint federal and state investigation. So it's always been, the feds have always been involved. There was never any surprise there. But he decided, Your Honor, that he was going to cooperate and he was going to plead guilty. And he wasn't made any promises. He didn't receive any deals. There's no deal. You know, he pled guilty in federal court and his sentence was calculated by the sentencing guidelines. It included both the Satterfield and the Pinckney matters. And Judge Gergel sentenced him pursuant to those guidelines. There was no variance. There was no downward departure. There was no stipulation of a sentence. He took the sentence that was within the guideline range, and he didn't know what that guideline range would be when he pled guilty, and he had no idea what would happen or transpire in state court. But at the end of the day, he made a decision to have faith in this system and to expect, like has been his experience and his wife's experience in the judicial system for a long time, that he would be treated fairly. And that's all he's asked for, Your Honor. That's all he asked for today. I would submit to you that he has accepted responsibility for his conduct. He did not put either the state or the federal government through lengthy litigation or a trial. We didn't come here today to quabble about a trial date. We came here today to fully acknowledge the illegal conduct to which he engaged. I know that I've provided Your Honor with a transcript from his federal plea. I think it's very, very clear in that proceeding, in addition to this proceeding, that he has acknowledged his illegal conduct. And not only that, that he is deeply remorseful for his actions. And he appreciates the fact that his actions have impacted innocent people. And that's the reason he pled guilty. And I will say he is extremely, extraordinarily grateful to the Pinckneys and to the Satterfields for their grace. You know, during the federal sentencing hearing, they said they forgave him. They said that again today. That's hugely meaningful to him. And I don't think they'll ever understand how meaningful that is. So we appreciate that, and we appreciate the gracious manner in which they've handled this. So, Your Honor, I would say that Mr. Fleming has suffered, and he has paid a very, very dear price in this proceeding and in the other federal proceeding that would discourage him from ever engaging in similar conduct. And I believe, strongly believe, that Mr. Fleming will serve one day as a very important person who can share his story with other lawyers as a cautionary tale, with just other people. And that in and of itself, Your Honor, will promote deterrence. I believe that the tremendous consequences that he has felt in his professional life, he's voluntarily submitted his resignations to the bar of South Carolina and of Georgia. He will never practice law again. And, you know, that is, it was a profession that, although he made some profound mistakes in, it was a profession for a long time that he loved. And so that itself is a tremendous consequence of his misconduct. Also, Your Honor, I can't let it be said that the notoriety that has surrounded this case and the publicity that has surrounded it has itself, will serve as a significant general deterrence, but it is not something that every defendant has to deal with. It has been quite, as Your Honor well knows, quite significant. Your Honor, I have some people that would like to address the court, if the court would listen to them, and I would like to call them up now, if that is acceptable to Your Honor. And then Mr. Fleming also has some remarks that he would like to make to the court.
All right, we're going to break for lunch now for 1 hour and 15 minutes. It puts us about, what's that, a quarter to, I guess it'll be a quarter to three. So we'll be in recess. 1 hour and 15 minutes.
You're consuming the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.